My name is Cass, and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who have been following this podcast so far. We're now up to episode number 61. This podcast shows for all the Zine and Uber subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. So, hi everybody, welcome back to another show. We are ready to rock and roll. I am just sitting here putting ice on my knee as I just got back doing my run. And, can I honestly say, old age sucks. You know, I just had to put that in there, but there you go. A lot's been going on, and I'm really excited about a lot of things going on and moving forward, and they might not be going in the right direction, but they're going at least. So let's just, I don't really know where to start, so I'm just going to pick anywhere, okay, and just, like, get into it. So the music, okay, the music this week snippet is sent to us by a James Newton. It is Dannii Minogue's You Won't Forget About Me After Life from the Lounge Remix from her Club Disco album. And by the way, I want to say thank you for James from a truly beautiful email. He gave me some insight into a tiny bit of his great big life, and for that I'm very grateful. So here's to you, James. Thank you for that. Also, a book review this week is from James as well. And it's Josie's and Rebecca's The Western Chronicles by Veda Foster and B.L. Miller. I'll have the link as usual on my show blog for the notes. You probably can go over to the Athenium fanfic site and have a read there, that it's posted there, or you can actually go to, I think it's Boldstruck Books or something, one of those spots, and buy the book. So we continue on now with a video review, actually. There's a twist today. My book review wench, she sent in a video review, and she just loves to keep me on my toes. God bless her. So it's Suzanne Westenhofer's A Bottom on Top. I personally have not seen it, but she says it's very good. But it's a very good video, and it's about holding court in front of a receptive Indianapolis crowd. Suzanne Westenhofer shows why she's earned a reputation as an entertaining comedian who slings jokes about everyday topics and just so happens to be a lesbian, dishing on topics that almost everybody can relate to, like the embarrassment of your parents walking in on you having sex. Westenhofer also touches on the lighter set of gay cruises and the frustrations of using a strap-on. So there you go. That's the video review. In the book review that James sent me, he really didn't put out a very, there really isn't a big section on it, about it, but I'll read you what I do have, okay? And it goes something like this. When outlaw on the run, Josie Hunter rescues his young woman from her clutches of three desperados, she unwittingly sets in motion a change of events that will change both of their lives. Soon, Josie and Rebecca are reluctant companions on a journey that leads beyond secrets and past pain to a place neither of them expected to go. As they learn to rely on one another for survival in a harsh world, they eventually forge a bond far deeper than friendship. Foster and Miller have created an authentic tale of Old West fraught with danger, intrigue, and best of all, romance. The Western Chronicles is a feast of wonderfully drawn characters, thrilling action scenes, and a tender love story. So, sorry I didn't put that in the review when I said I was going to do the review, but I'm having a brain freeze at the moment as the ice drips down my leg. Okay, so let's move on with the show. Come and get some. Okay, on the Lucy front this week, it's just an FYI, but most of you already know this, that Lucy is not, I repeat, is not on Twitter. If you write to that person, it is an imposter, so just be aware of that when you do talk or write anything to Lucy on Twitter. Come and get some. On the Renee update this week, as you know, Renee will be starring in the new web series called Arc. You can check it out on the creation.net or creationnet.series. It's on the bottom left-hand corner there on the creation webpage. She's a bit like, I think it looks like from the trailer, a little bit like Linda Hamilton in The Terminator from the trailer screen caps, but check it out on the www.arctheseries.com and have a look for yourself. Also on there, if you take a look at the Renee O'Connor website, she's posted that Words Unspoken has been accepted into the West Hollywood International Film Festival on August 5th through the 8th in the heart of Hollywood in California. And at the bottom, she's written a note from herself saying, "I don't know if I will be attending yet, but since our cast and crew live nearby, there should be a nice turnout from the production." So you can have a look out if you're in that area. Have a look-see. And finally, the update on the great and illustrious series of my floor renovations regoing. I am just, I've had it with this. You know, this is truly a comedy of fuck-ups. Excuse the language. I've reached my tether with these idiots. They're just, and it goes from one to another, honestly, it just perpetuates. It's like, they have no idea what the left hand is doing on the right, honestly. And they came out last week, and they checked the floor and said, "Yeah, you're right. Brought an expert out. Yeah, definitely get the manufacturer out here to have a look at this." Then the guy said, "Oh, well, I don't know where I can get him out. Hopefully beginning of next week, I'll send off the paperwork." And he got him on the phone and stuff. "Yeah, I'll send you the paperwork. Da-da-da, great." And he told me before, you know, they told me before they left that, you know, we'll be early next week. And, well, it's Thursday. And no phone call. Not that I expected one or anything. And the kicker is they both decided to try and gang up on me when I said, "I'm not accepting this floor. This isn't the floor that I wanted. You know, I didn't ask for a dull, sanded black matte finish. I wanted a nice, shining finish to my floor. That's what I got initially, and that's what I want." And well, you accepted it, and I'm like, "No, you gave us the wrong product, and then you told us that's all you could get. What am I supposed to do?" So that went back and forth, and I said, "Listen, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not accepting this floor in the discussion." And that was the calm before the storm, you know, the nice, quiet, serene voice. So they left, and I immediately got on the phone to the higher ups, the contractors who organized all this stuff. And I told the guy, I said, "I'm not happy. I don't care what you have to do, but you can come and have this floor ripped up right now for all I care. I'm not accepting this." And he goes, "Leave it with me. I'll get back with you next week." So he got back with me, he didn't get back with me. As a matter of fact, the guy who came out on Friday called me up on Tuesday, and he said, "Listen, I don't know when they're going to come out, but when they do, don't say anything about the floor. Just, you know, show them that, it needs replacement and stuff." And he goes, "And I'll go out and get you your floor." And I'm like, "Woohoo! You mean I actually scored one for the consumer? I actually am going to get what I had wanted, which was my original floor. Be still my heart." Yeah. And then I'm sitting here thinking, okay, when is the builder going to come out and fix the wall and paint the wall and the door? So I made a call yesterday and said, when are they going to come out? "Oh, I don't know. I'll have them call you back tomorrow." Okay, fair enough. So they called today, and this guy thought it was about the floor. And I'm like, "No, I want my wall and I want my door fixed." "Oh, I didn't even know about that." Well, duh. So it's just like, oh, this gets better and better. So now I've got to wait for them to call me back, supposedly, and sort this out. Because apparently the painter that called us and said, "Is everything ready?" He's the one who's actually supposed to be coming out and fixing the wall and painting it. And I'm like, "No, he just said he was coming out to paint it." It's just... La, la, la. You just gotta say, heavens, heaven, heaven have us. But that's okay. That's all exciting. It's done with. And we're gonna rock on and do a recap and go into the show now that, I've vented. So, on with the show. Come and get some. Okay, and the quick recap this week of the show last week. Xena had told Gabrielle that they were going to go see her parents. They had discovered her parents, and they were going to go see her at Podadia. And she was really excited to the point that she actually became physically ill because her nerves and the excitement were just too much on her. So in the caravan, as they were going through, Xena got her to rest in one of the wagons, covered wagons, and she got her to sleep. But Effany was really concerned over her being so ill and stuff over it. And it really disconcerted everybody around, but, you know, she managed to muddle through it. And as they went along, Xena was talking to her and telling about things that were happening, and then, you know, that Gabrielle didn't need to apologize for anything that was going on, and just that she had actually had a nightmare, so to speak, but it was like a vision of a nightmare. And Xena had asked her about it, but Gabrielle didn't want to tell her, and Xena told her, look, you don't need to lie. You can tell me to pretty much bugger off, and I'll respect that, but it's better that you just tell me that versus letting my mind think that something's going on. The next morning, Gabrielle got up and they rode on into town, and it was there that they surrounded by, you know, the infantrymen and the members of the Royal Guard and anything. And Xena asked Gabrielle if she remembered anything, nothing. And she saw a tree, and in the tree it was some tattered rope with one of the plank of a rotting wood dangling haphazardly from one of the ropes, and it must have been a swing, and Gabrielle remembered it. And when Xena led her down off Tenoria to go ahead and walk over and have a look at the tree, Atreus pulled Xena over and told her that he had a really bad feeling about it, and that it was it made her feel really funny inside, and he couldn't quite put his hand on it, but, you know, Xena took it as, look, if something bothers you, you know, then it's something for me to be concerned about. It was a few minutes later that Gabrielle's mother and father actually wound up being right there by the tree. And all the introductions were made, and Xena said, look, this is a private thing. So Effany and Atreus decided to stay outside, and Xena and Gabrielle went inside to the house. And Gabrielle had her reunion with her sister, Lila. And then Xena noticed that Hecuba, Gabrielle's mother, was very standoffish. And when they walked inside and she had a tea, Hecuba tried to have the conversation constantly lead that what Gabrielle did to survive, you know, that she never had heard of such a thing in regards to slavers, and that, you know, and Gabrielle was going to say something in regards to being what she actually was, which is a body slave. But Xena had interrupted her and tried to steer the question away from it. And even though Herodotus, Gabrielle's dad, seemed interested in all Gabrielle's tales about what had been going on and everything, Hecuba just appeared to constantly try to steer the conversation back to Gabrielle's time as a slave, no matter how often Xena directed it away. And at one point, she asked her, how did you serve Gabrielle? What did they force you to do? And Herodotus actually chastised his wife. He says, you know, he doesn't matter, leave it alone. And Hecuba truly revealed the colors, and it's like, what if the rumors are true? How we hold our heads up? And it was there that her true colors came out, that she was concerned that Gabrielle, because Gabrielle told her that I was a body slave, that, you know, you were better off dying than do something like that. And Gabrielle was like, how could you even say such a thing? I tried to keep myself alive. And, you know, she just, she never lied to any or tried to hide anything alive. And Hecuba just kept going on and on and berating her, saying that, you know, it was more of one thing to do, but what you did, you sound almost proud of it. Hecuba accused her of, and Hecuba accused her of choosing Gabrielle, for choosing to give her body up. And Gabrielle says, I've tried to stay alive. That's all I did. I gave him my body, yeah, but I didn't give him my soul and my heart and brain. And she eventually, you know, just got to the point where she says, by the God, you know, how could you have a pathetic excuse for a woman such as you had given birth to me? And she stormed out of the house, leaving Hecuba sputtering with rage. And that's when Xena took over. And that's where we continue on with the Conqueror series, Tale 3, Times Fell Hand, by the late L.J. Moss.
Come and get them.
Chapter 22, He Jest at Scars, Who Never Felt Their Wound. I quickly debated. A part of me wanted to follow Gabrielle, but there was something I knew for certain. I would be of little comfort to her in the mood I was in now. A rage flowed through me so strong that it caused my entire body to tremble. The beast within me tried to fight its way free. Its attempts to free itself from my domination actually caused me physical pain, so much so that if I lifted my shirt, I halfway expected to see stripes across my belly from where the beast tried to claw its way out. I clutched at my abdomen in order to fight off the cramping of my muscles. Never before had I wanted to free the darkness inside more, but at the same time, I knew I could not. I deliberated for a few heartbeats over simply letting go, loosing one blood-curdling scream and allowing the beast free rein of its murdering impulses. I pictured the carnage should I allow that to happen. It was tempting, to be sure, and as justified I felt my rage to be. These people were still Gabrielle's parents. At that moment, however, I'm sure that it repulsed us both to admit that fact. No, I had to regain control and swallow my thirst for reprisal. I had to close my eyes tightly for a moment. It seemed a great effort to draw air into my lungs. The beast pushed, and I pushed right back. For the first time, I could see the entity in a sort of physical form. It was easily my exact size and shape, but shrouded in darkness as if covered completely by a black cloak. So much easier this time to fight off the tempting lies it whispered in my ear. I was finally fighting something I could see, even if I was the only one in the room with a particular sight. After all, I was a warrior by nature, a woman who spent a lifetime perfecting that art. It was almost anticlimactic, then, when I shoved with all my might, and the beast slunk away, nursing the unseen wounds I inflicted. I finally became aware of my surroundings, feeling as though so much more time had passed than the few minutes it actually happened. I glanced around to find Hecuba and Herodas staring at me in an odd fashion. I wasn't certain whether their strange looks came because of my behavior, or the fact that they finally realized they had angered me to the point where I lost all reason. I stood straighter, shaking off the last bits of control for which the beast tried to cling to. I glared at Hecuba. She returned my stare, but looked away first.
"You don't understand,"
she murmured with slightly less conviction than when she had spoken to Gabrielle. "I don't understand?" I questioned, carefully trying to keep my voice even, but perhaps failing. I wasn't the woman who just told her daughter that she should have died as a weakling and a coward.
"There are more things to be considered than just our feelings."
What more could there be? What more matters? Hades' teeth, woman! What could you have possibly been thinking? What about your other daughter? What if she suffered the same fate as Gabrielle?
Then I hope she died before letting them dishonor her. If she allowed them to handle her as Gabrielle did, then I have no children,
Hecuba answered. I think my mouth hung open as I stared at the woman, utterly amazed by her response. By the gods, how could you deny your own children for having such incredible strength? Gabrielle suffered more indignities than most people see in a lifetime. She not only came away from the experience touched in a way that she will live with forever, but also with the ability to offer compassion to the very people who marked her in the first place. I suspect I wouldn't have been able to do the same, and I damn well know you could not have.
You speak of her as if her reputation was as clean as a Hessian virgin instead of what she really is. Was,
she hurriedly answered, adding upon seeing my arched eyebrow.
I've heard what people have said for the last season, she continued. How do you think I felt inside, knowing that it was my daughter who became known as the Conqueror's whore?
I couldn't stop my actions, nor at the time that I have any real desire to. I crossed to where she stood in two easy strides and grabbed the front of her blouse, gripping it in my fist. I dragged the surprised woman across the room until I pressed her against the wall near to where Herodotus still stood. I wanted to hurt her as I held her there, but I knew words alone wouldn't touch her in the same way as our own harsh speech had wounded Gabrielle. What surprised me most was Herodotus' complete lack of chivalry. In those mere heartbeats that ticked by, I suspected his behavior had more to do with his browbeaten status as Hecuba's husband than his fear of me. I watched as my grip tightened at the neck of her clothing. That's when I clearly saw the expression she wore. It was nothing new to me. I had seen that look before upon the faces of hundreds, thousands of people in my lifetime, men, women in battle or in my bed. The expression was one of fear, but not of ordinary sight of fright. Rather, it was a look of someone who fully expected life to end for them in a matter of moments. I believed that she truly felt as though I was going to kill her,
And oh, how I wanted to. I could feel the fingers of my free hand closing into a tight fist, feel my arm become almost weightless as I raised it into the air. I stared at the scene as though outside myself, watching from some distant corner of the room. Causing this woman physical pain seemed to be the only way to hurt her. She was impervious to emotion, as her lack of love or concern for Gabrielle so aptly demonstrated. I found myself more than willing to show the woman what real hurt felt like, yet I could not do so because of Gabrielle. Hecuba's words came back to me, though.
How do you think I felt inside, knowing that it was my daughter that became Mrs. Conker's whore?
I paused my arm, stopping in midair, so Atreus had been right.
How long have you known about Gabrielle?
I asked.
Please, Xena, Conker, I assure you, we had no idea.
Herodotus finally spoke up, but I saw the truth in Hecuba's eyes before she uttered a word to interrupt him.
As soon as you brought her to Corinth, rumors flew. We're not so far from the seat of the Empire as you think.
Hecuba!
Herodotus cried out. To the man's credit, he looked as though she had struck him with her words. I had suspected that he knew of Gabrielle's past, and chose to ignore it out of the love for his daughter. Now I could plainly see that this was the first time he was hearing such a thing.
Oh, don't be a fool! She snapped back. How could you not have heard the gossip in town?
Because I choose not to talk with people like that. How could you keep such a thing to yourself, bah, and not tell me that you believed our daughter was alive?
Have you listened to a thing I said here today?
Her voice increased in volume until it was just shy of yelling.
She is the only our daughter because I gave birth to her. If she stayed with us, we could have taught her what her is proper. How can we hold up our heads when everyone knows what she's done?
Hecuba opened her mouth to continue, but she finally looked at my fist, still hanging in midair, knuckles white with the strain of not smashing into her skull. She swallowed, and at last looked nervous instead of pious. Her thoughts were as transparent as water. She wondered just then, wondered what she had not thought to worry about yet. I could see she questioned whether I would actually cause her physical harm or not. To tell the truth, I considered that silent question myself.
You act as though she had some say in the matter,
I said, teeth clenched together and my hand still poised in the air.
Like she asked to be kidnapped and sold into slavery.
She may not have a say in being taken away, but she chose to defile herself. She chose that sick and perverse life.
Chose it over death,
I retorted. Our eyes locked and I knew what her response was going to be before she said it.
Then I wish she would have died.
I knew in my heart just then that she had forfeit her life with that statement. It barely took a heartbeat, though, for my fist to begin its forward momentum. Everything began to move slowly as though we were long moments between thought and action instead of the tick of an eye. I saw the terror in the eyes of the woman before me, and I heard her scream. It was more like a howl, an animal's mark of rage. That's when I realized the torture cry was my own. My fist made contact, and the beast inside howled with glee. Finally, there would be blood. Little did my darkness know that at this moment was to be a turning point in our relationship. The wood plank beside Hecuba's head groaned and splintered on the impact of my blow. I watched as a tiny rivulet of crimson ran down the wall. Hecuba's eyes fluttered open. Perhaps she wondered why I stood before her and not Hades. I felt a touch on my shoulder and turned to see Herodotus standing beside me.
Please, Conker, have mercy,
he said. I shrugged him off and released my hold on Hecuba. She fell limply into her husband's arms. I silently crossed the room towards the door, but turned back just before exiting.
I'll not tell Gabrielle of our exchange, but know one thing. Just as you wished her dead to save your own petty reputations, so you are dead to us. You've made your decision. You'll have to live with it.
I exited the house and scanned the small yard, searching for Gabrielle. I spotted Ephany, leaning against the split-rail fence. She straightened when I came into her view, her gaze immediately going down to my injured hand. I examined the injury myself for the first time after stopping beside Ephany.
Give me Lith a bandage,
I commanded one of the soldiers lingering about. He quickly returned and handed me the requested strip of cloth.
Where's Gabrielle? I asked Ephany.
In the barn. She wanted to be alone for a spell.
Is she... Was she upset?
I would say that was putting it mildly.
Was she a mess? You know, crying?
Actually, just the opposite. I don't know she knew words like that,
Effany answered with a smirk.
She snapped at me when I tried to talk to her, so I thought it best to let her calm down. I guess her reunion didn't go as she hoped.
You guessed right. They found her past a little unsettling. At least one of them did, anyway. Did you suspect, too?
About the mother? Well, she didn't act as I would have at finding my long-lost daughter. If I'd known it was going to go so badly, I would have warned you. I'm sorry Gabrielle had to experience that. She deserves better.
You're damn right she does,
I replied as I drew water from the well and rinsed my bleeding knuckles. Did you snap one of them in two?
Effany asked in that deadpan manner of hers. No, nothing so dramatic. Not that I didn't want to. I wrapped the long, narrow cloth around my hand and tied it off to control the bleeding. It didn't feel broken, but I guessed it would be quite sore for a day or two. The blood came from abrasions the wood had caused, and the crimson fluid seeped from the wounds each time I angrily flexed my hand. I didn't have time just then to examine all that had gone wrong in the house, especially my own psyche and how light I felt since the moment that I had refused the beast its blood tribute. It would take some time before I could discuss it with Gabrielle, considering the circumstances that brought about the transition between darkness and me. Atreus joined us and silently indicated my hand with the disapproving look he has. It's nothing major. I didn't hurt either one of them, I said in an answer to his unspoken query.
Son of a buck, sorry,
he added, apologizing to Effany. She smiled at her ally.
I've said worse.
How's Gabrielle? I'm going to go see her now. I suspect we won't be spending any more time here than we have to, though.
Looks like a pretty good storm moving in. We should at least camp the night and start out in the morning,
Atreus said. Good plan. Let's not set up too close to their farm. How about the first stop we made this morning?
Aye, Kankara. I'll make it so.
He answered and quickly left to begin preparations.
I'll leave Micah here in case you need anything. I'm sure Atreus could use a helping hand.
She looked up at the sky, which darkened considerably since I'd been inside. She pushed aside a blonde curly locks and wiped the sweat from her forehead.
The air is becoming thick. Looks like that storm will be upon us sooner than we think. I'll do what I can to get the tents up.
Thanks, Effany, I answered. I didn't even see her turn and go, so preoccupied I was with how to comfort Gabrielle. I'd never really seen Gabrielle angry, not the actual anger that I experienced on many occasions. She had always been able to take a deep breath and see the other side of the coin. She always used to tell me that there was two sides to every story, and she had the unique ability to think that way during times of emotional conflict. The only other way I'd seen her handle rage had been to become eerily quiet, turning inward and curling into a fetal position within her mind. I had always suspected that this behavior came from her somewhat low self-esteem. She always seemed to imagine that everything was her fault, so I believed her behavior had been due to guilt, feeling guilty for imagined reasons that only she knew or understood. I say all this to show what a complete surprise it was to me entering the barn where Gabrielle had gone. She paced back and forth in front of the stalls, her body held stiffly, her hands clenched into fists. It was a terrible experience for Gabrielle to go through, yet how wonderful. For the first time, maybe in all her life, Gabrielle dispelled anger for herself over something that had been done to her. This time it wasn't in defense of another. It was only for her. However, I only think of this now as I sit here writing by the light of the candle. At the time it happened, I could only feel a hollow sort of pain in my chest as my heart broke for my young wife.
Could you believe her?
Gabrielle said between clenched teeth as soon as she saw me.
How could... God! How could she be my mother?
I said nothing in response. What could I say? I had agreed completely, but I had no idea just then how to make Gabrielle feel better about the whole experience. I wanted to make it right for her, fix it somehow, but I could not see a way to accomplish that. Gabrielle stopped moving and looked at me. I could only hope that all the love and affection I had for this woman was apparent in my gaze. Quite suddenly, it looked as if all the energy it took to maintain such rage unexpectedly left her. Her eyes went from dark green back to the customary bright emerald. Then she rushed across the hay-strewn floor and into my arms. I squeezed her tightly until I feared that she would no longer be able to breathe. I kissed her and murmured the sort of nonsensical things that lovers say to one another in an attempt to provide comfort. It must have worked because she pulled away enough to look at me, The expression of fury had left, but pain was still evident there in her face. In a way, I was surprised that she showed no signs of tears. When, I wondered to myself, would she cry?
Is this really happening?
Gabriella asked, her forehead now pressed into my chest. Little one, I'm so sorry. I feel responsible for all of this. She lifted her head.
Sina, don't you dare. There is no way you could have known what she was like, what she thought of me.
I should have investigated more. I should have...
Please, love, don't take this on your head. What you tried to do for me was lovely, and I'll never forget it.
Excuse me, my queen.
Micah just stood at the entrance of the large double doors to the barn. She had that look on her face that said she would like to be anywhere, doing anything, other than what she was about to do.
I'm very sorry, but you're the man, he wishes to speak with you and refuses to take no for an answer.
I stepped away from Gabrielle, determined to let Herodotus know what he could do to Tartarus before I allow him to see my wife again. Gabrielle reached for me, grabbing my bandaged hand. I winced and she looked down, seeing my injury for the first time.
Sina!
It's nothing, I shrugged.
Did you...
I didn't hurt them. I gave her a weak grin. I just hurt the wall a little bit.
Why?
I looked around, trying to figure out what to say.
Was it over something they said? Something she said?
Words can't hurt us, love.
It must have been something awful to make you punch a wall. What did she say, Sina?
I knew I would tell her. Someday, if she asked, I would speak of it. But not now. It was just too raw.
You wouldn't care if it was about you. I know that much about you, my conqueror. It must have been about me, wasn't it?
Now isn't the time, my love. We can talk about this later. I promise I won't keep anything from you. But not now. Trust me on this, all right? She slowly nodded her head, reaching up gently to kiss me. She turned to Micah, still waiting at the door, looking uncomfortable.
Let him in, Micah. Then leave us, please.
Micah nodded, wearing that expression of relief in return followed by Herodotus. As Micah left the barn, I stepped back into the shadows. Gabrielle had indicated her need to handle this alone, to play out the scenario to its fruition. I refused to see her hurt, but I also respected her wish and understood her desire to stand tall before this man. Micah left the man just inside the entrance. He looked 100 seasons older than when we first met just a few candle marks earlier. I suspected that what his wife had to say to him after I left had a great deal to do with his defeated body language. He took a step forward, but stopped when he saw me leaning against the stall gate.
I just wanted a moment with her,
he said. If he was hinting that I leave, he would be disappointed.
I stay to make sure we don't have a repeat performance,
I said as I glared at him from my spot in the shadows.
I have no secrets from Sina,
Gabrielle said.
Anything you say to me can be said in front of Sina.
Herodotus looked about as uncomfortable as one man can get. I couldn't work up a great deal of sympathy for his plight, but I did have pity. He let his wife run his life, even to the point of refusing to acknowledge his own daughter. I wondered what he would say, if he could stand up for himself, or if he continued to stand in Hecuba's domineering shadow. He stood there looking at his boots.
Gabrielle.
He looked up quickly.
May I still call you that?
Of course.
Gabrielle couldn't help smiling.
I never knew, Gabrielle. I swear to you, I never knew about you. I don't want you thinking...
Enlighten me,
Gabrielle interrupted.
Knew what about me?
Well, that... I...
Herodotus looked back at me. The man assumed I had rushed out and told Gabrielle what her mother had done. How simple was he? If I hadn't been angry before, I was after that. He stammered and stumbled around his words, looking at me to get him out of it. Gabrielle knew that I knew, so there was nothing to be done but give her a quick version. Gods, I could have strangled him. Gabrielle was now looking at me, too, an expecting expression on her face.
Hecuba admitted that she suspected you were their daughter ever since you came with me to Corinth and the rumors got out. She knew, but, well, you know how she feels. I'm sorry, love. I was going to tell you all of it.
Gabrielle stood looking a little numb. She had one of those faraway looks in her eyes, as if she couldn't quite grasp the truth of what I had just told her.
It's all right, Zena. I understand,
she said absently.
Just finding it a little hard to believe. She knew. All the way back then and never said anything. What kind of people are you?
She asked Herodotus.
Gabriel, I...
he stammered. If it helps, Gabriel. I believe he's telling the truth when he says he didn't know. I don't think Hecuba told him. I responded.
It's true,
he said.
I could never have gone without trying to contact you, even if you would have thought me mad. I don't know what came over Hecuba. We spoke about you only after the Conqueror's Maid contacted us, but she never hinted that she felt so strongly about things.
I see,
Gabriel said slowly.
So where does that leave us?
Gods, there it was in her eye, a tiny look of hope. If I thought she might hear me, I would have sent her some sort of mental message, begging her not to hold out any hope, not to put any faith in this man who had none at all in himself.
Gabriel, no matter what anyone says, even Hecuba, you will always be my daughter.
He took her hands in his, and I wondered if he was going to prove me wrong, that perhaps he developed the backbone in the past few Kylomarks.
Please believe me when I say that nothing you have done, or were forced to do, could dampen my joy at seeing you alive and healthy again. A piece of me died the day you disappeared. I honestly haven't felt true happiness until I saw you today. I just knew you were my Gabrielle.
Gabrielle smiled, and I thought that even with all the rest that had gone on, hearing her father say those words would be one good memory that she could take with her.
Perhaps. Maybe you could come to Corinth for a visit.
Gabrielle looked at me as she said this, and I nodded my head.
I know it's rather soon, but...
Gabrielle,
Herodotus interrupted.
I'm not a strong man. I love you, my child, but I just... Hecuba can be...
He let loose one of her hands, and his shoulders sagged. I watched as Gabrielle's expression told me that she was a perceptive woman. Her eyes narrowed, and her body grew rigid. There were small changes in the way she looked and held herself, but I noticed them all the same. They said that she knew what her father was trying to say. Gods, he couldn't even stand up to his daughter, a virtual stranger.
What are you trying to say?
Gabrielle asked him. She stood even straighter now, a slight edge to her voice.
If it were up to me, or only me, but Hecuba, she's a strong woman.
Gabrielle looked every bit the queen, said it first.
Perhaps it would be best if we didn't see one another, for a while at least.
She might come around.
He looked relieved and hopeful at the same time. Unfortunately, it was apparent that both of them realized that day would never come, and that this would probably be the last time they ever saw one another.
I'm sure you'll write me if anything changes,
she said.
Perhaps it won't be long at all.
Perhaps,
she answered. He leaned in, and she allowed him to kiss her cheek. He squeezed her hands one last time.
Maybe someday.
He trailed off before turning to leave.
Yes, someday.
Gabrielle agreed. He never heard a response, though. He had already gone. She answered my earlier question the moment Herodotus left the barn. Like the queen that she was, Gabrielle held herself together for as long as she needed to. Once it was only she and I, Gabrielle gave herself permission to fall apart. I expected it, and crossed the room just in time to catch her as she crumbled to the floor in tears. Please, love. I know you don't feel like it, but you need to eat just something. She shook her head, wrapping her fingers around a mug of tea.
I know, Zena, but I can't force one bite down.
The rain fell in steady sheets against the tent. The sound of falling rain had always been a sort of comfort sound to me. Under different circumstances, Gabriel and I would have been enjoying one another's company, lying on a soft mattress of cushions beside the large brazier in the center of the tent. Unfortunately, the events of the day had cast a gloom upon us that matched the weather outside. Gabriel sat unhappily beside the fire, unable to eat, barely communicative. I only made matters worse, I'm certain, by hovering all or afternoon. I was as much of an emotional jumble as Gabriel. This latest turn had handcuffed my customary need to fix all that went wrong in Gabrielle's life. This time, however, nothing I did or said seemed to make any better for her. By nightfall, I had attempted everything I knew to turn Gabrielle's dark move around, but nothing worked. I did not blame her at all. I would have felt no different had it happened to me. Gabrielle poured herself another cup of tea.
I can't seem to get warm enough,
she said.
I feel chilled to the bone.
I wrapped a soft fur robe around her, and she offered me a weak smile.
Thank you, love. I'm sorry I'm not better company.
I knelt beside her chair and pulled the robe closer about her. Little one, you don't have to pretend for me. You know that. I know what you're feeling, and I understand completely. She nodded and let her head fall against my shoulder.
I'm sorry,
she said as she brushed away the tears that had fallen as continually as the rain outside.
I can't seem to stop this. I'm trying, but...
Shh, love. Don't think too hard on it. Just let your emotions go. If you need to cry, then cry. It won't make you feel any better by holding them in check.
I feel so... I don't even know how to describe it. I don't even feel like I know what I'm doing, Xena.
She began to cry harder, and I knew we were in for another candle mark or so of tears. This had gone on until I felt she had no more tears in her to cry. I had been wrong. Just when it seemed that she had calmed, the emotions rise to the surface once more. I took the mug from Gabrielle's hand and placed it on a small table, lifting her into my arms and carrying her to our bed. Let's lie down, love, I whispered. I held her in my arms, feeling completely useless. I silently prayed for Athena's help in easing my wife's pain. All I could do was to stroke her hair and whisper tender encouragements and declarations of my love. I don't know how much time had passed, but she quieted at last, and fully dressed, we both fell into very uneasy slumber. Some candle marks later, the rain had not decreased any. Its steady, almost hollow sound as it hit the tent had lulled me to sleep. Now the empty sound awoke me. Gabrielle? I murmured sleepily. Gone was the comforting weight of her body against me. I reached out a hand to find an empty space. The air in the tent was chill and the lamps had remained lit when we first lay down, had either burned out or had been extinguished by hand. The fire in the brazier had burned down to glowing red coals, meaning it had been some time since the servant had placed fresh wood upon the fire. Leaning up upon one elbow, I found not only Gabrielle's empty side of the bed, but her abandoned bedclothes as well. I looked around the tent, more alert now. The hairs along the back of my neck stood on end, a sure sign that my senses were telling me something was wrong. Gabrielle! I quickly rose, fully clothed and still wearing my boots. I tossed two short logs onto the fire to illuminate the tent. Reached down for the second thick branch, I realized that the wood in the basket was the same wood that had been there when I went to bed. It caught my attention because a servant, or even one of our private guards, would have been assigned to keep the fire going throughout the night of our tent. Determined not yet to panic, I scanned the room for any additional clues as to her whereabouts. She had tossed her dressing gown down upon the chair, yet her traveling clothes, boots, and heavy cloak were missing. It was apparent that she'd left the tent, but to combat my rising sense of panic, I told myself that it was this weather. If she needed some air, even wanted a private trip to relieve herself, she would have dressed in those missing items. I turned aside the curtain that separated the small antechamber from the main tent. The next flap was heavier, covering the entrance from the elements. I stepped out into the rain, blowing straight across and into my face. The weather had turned colder, the wind and rain cutting right through my clothing. The royal guard were absent, but Micah, the Amazon, stood beside the tent, lowering her hands to keep them warm.
Lord Conqueror,
she snapped to attention.
Where are the guards?
I shouted to be heard above the whistling wind.
Get! The queen sent them to get warm. I said I'd stay.
Where's Gabrielle?
She took a trip to the edge of the woods. Said she wasn't feeling well.
Micah answered. She looked confused.
And you didn't go with her?
Well, she said she wanted some privacy. I didn't think...
That much is apparent!
I grabbed the neck of her leather tunic and tossed her towards the woolly area 50 paces away.
Find her!
I moved to follow her to find Gabrielle before myself, but suddenly realized that a fool I would look like when Micah brought an embarrassed and possibly mad Gabrielle back to her.
Guard!
I shouted at the top of my voice. To their credit, barely the wink of an eye passed before nearly 20 soldiers rushed from different tents, their swords drawn. They knew my voice and understood it must have been trouble for me to call out like that. Once Micah brought Gabrielle safely back into camp, I would have every one of the royal guards standing out in the freezing rain for the rest of the night. Amazons and Empire soldiers alike rushed to the sound of my voice, all of them heedless of the weather. Ephany came to the run just ahead of Atreus.
What's wrong?
Atreus asked.
These morons left their post when Gabrielle told them to get warm.
Atreus looked astounded, and Effie glared through the dripping wet curls at the two Amazons who were supposed to be with the royal guard.
"The queen told us to—"
the ranking guardsman began to explain, unaware that in my mind that he had already been demoted.
"She told you, did she?"
I shouted.
"You fucking idiot! Even if I tell you to leave your royal post on guard duty, you're supposed to refuse! Isn't that what you were trained to do?"
"I conquer, but—"
"Son of a buckeye!"
I spat as I turned to Atreus.
"Does he want to meet Hades tonight?"
The officer's continual attempt at making an excuse for his behavior was wearing on my last nerve. Atreus took over.
"Not one word!"
he warned the young officer.
"The queen is kind-hearted, but you know better than to obey that sort of order. She's—"
"She's gone!"
Micah's voice surprised me as she came running up to where we stood. I had honestly not expected that, and dearly wanted her to ask for Peter's self.
"She? She who?"
Effany asked. She looked at the faces around her.
"Where's Gabrielle?"
"Fuck!"
I shouted. I wanted to throttle Micah. The only thing that saved her life that day was the fact that my mind had already moved on to where Gabrielle might have gone. Micah quickly explained to Effany what she had told me. Atreus had already begun to shout orders and mount up riders. I went back to the tent and ripped off my soaked shirt, oblivious to the fact that Atreus stood directly behind me. He had seen my nakedness before. Right at this moment, I didn't care what he saw or thought. I quickly donned a dry shirt and grabbed my heavy cloak from where it had been hanging near the fire. Atreus realized what I was doing once I buckled on my sword.
"Conqueror, please stay. You'd be safer here. Let us look for her. If her kidnappers—"
"She wasn't kidnapped,"
I said just in time for Effany to hear as she entered the tent.
"Did I just hear you correctly?"
She looked warily between Atreus and me. "Gabriel left of her own accord. I'm sure of it," I answered.
"I don't understand."
Atreus looked as though he didn't know whether to be relieved or not.
"I think I do," Effany responded. "It has something to do with today, with her family, doesn't it?"
"I think it has everything to do with that." I pulled on a pair of black leather riding gloves. "She's not herself, like she's having some sort of emotional breakdown."
"Damn me to Tartarus!"
I hissed the words out loud enough for them to take a step back.
"I should have seen this coming!"
"Why don't we get her back before we start taking on blame?"
Atreus said.
"Where would she go?"
"Well, her horse is gone. She's not on foot. I have trackers combing the area around the corral. But with this weather, tracks are going to be all but washed away."
"She's not much running away from something as it is to it," I said. "She doesn't know what she's doing exactly. She's unhappy and her whole world just crashed in on her today." I quickly explained what had happened to Gabrielle's parents.
"I think she's just going somewhere. I just don't know where or why. I think she's acting on feeling, instinct."
"There are three roads leading away from Portadea. We're sort of at a loss if we don't know where she's going,"
Atreus said. "Let's split into three groups. Atreus, send some men back towards her parents' house, just to see if she would try to see them again. Then you take the road leading back to Potidaea. Effie and I will get along the road to Amphipolis. No matter what you find, be back here by sunrise. If we haven't returned, break camp and follow us, but send some men into the woods instead of following along the main road."
"Aye, Conqueror."
Atreus left without another word. A man of action, I knew I could count on him to do his best to find my wife. By the time Effie and I left the tent, I found Tenorio saddled and pawing at the ground, the member of the royal guard that had infuriated me so much, holding the stallion's reins. We didn't say a word to one another, but he mounted his own horse and waited behind me.
"Lord Conqueror, I—"
Micah began.
"Get away from me,"
I said in a hissing voice. It was only my focus on Gabrielle which kept me from beating the Amazon to a pulp. I feared that if time had not been such a factor, even my newfound control would not have held back the beast. I would have littered the camp with beheaded guards. "Micah, consider yourself lucky to be alive," Effany said as she jumped onto her own mount saddle. "I'll decide what to do with you later."
"If it helps at all, she hasn't gone for more than a half candle mark," Micah responded.
We rode hard after hearing that Gabrielle hadn't left camp that long ago. The wind caused the rain to hit my face as though it was full of stinging bits of rock. I knew the road well and let Tenorio have free rein as we thundered along the muddy terrain. Effany's pony, along with the other Amazon mount, could simply not keep up with my huge stallion speed. We quickly outdistanced them. I heard Effany shout something, but I couldn't hear what it was. I wouldn't have stopped anyway. I blinked a few times against the rain, and then rubbed my eyes in an attempt to clear my vision. Just ahead, I thought I saw a shadow of a rider. The heavy rain's cloud hid the moon, so there wasn't the slightest bit of sliver orb to light up the night. The blackness well and truly surrounded me,
so I couldn't be sure of the shadow had been wishful thinking on my part or not. I had slowed enough to find Effany riding beside me once again. We could barely hear one another above the wind. A quick flash of lightning illuminated the road ahead of us, and we both saw it this time. Effany pointed and I nodded. A cloaked figure sped ahead of us, heedless of the weather. We drew closer, and another jagged streak of lightning tore through the black sky. There was no question this time. The figure was too small to be a man, yet the perfect size to be Gabrielle. Covered in a dark cloak, she sat low in the saddle, her cheek nearly pressed against the galloping horse's neck. I motioned towards Effany to set her up on the other side of the road. We easily caught up to Gabrielle, and I could see that her gray mare was retiring. Her sides heaved, and I could see the animal's large puffs of breath in the cold air. Each strike of lightning from the sky illuminated the landscape as bright as day, and I finally caught a glimpse of Gabrielle's face. The cloak's hood had blown backwards, but Gabrielle seemed oblivious. Her gaze looked vacant and tense, and her face was as pale as the brilliant white light that surrounded us with each flash of lightning. The hollow pain in my belly made me want to retch. Never had I seen Gabrielle so stressed before, yet so seemingly unaware of her surroundings.
"Gabrielle!"
I screamed over the wind and rain. She never looked at me, only stared straight ahead with some sort of absent-minded fixation. It was as if my Gabrielle wasn't inside this woman. Effany caught my attention as she pushed her mount up against Gabrielle's horse. The animal's actions squeezed Gabrielle towards Tenorio and me. The stallion seemed to know what we had planned. He craned his neck and pushed his head against the side of the mare's head. The action frightened the small animal enough so that she slowed her pace in an attempt to free herself from her confinement. Effany reached over and made a play at grabbing Gabrielle's reins. She missed, and my heart nearly stopped. Her foot had slipped from the saddle stirrup, and she nearly fell from her mount's back. Riding herself again, she closed the space between her horse and Gabrielle's, and grabbed at the reins once more. Gabrielle seemed to fight for control, but decided to simply hang on to the mare's neck as the horse slowed to a stop. I was off Tenorio in a flash, before the animal could even stop his own gait. Effany still held the mare's reins, and Gabrielle nearly tumbled off the horse's back.
"Gabrielle!"
I called her name, but she looked right at me as if I was a stranger, as though she couldn't see me.
"No!"
she cried out.
"Let me go!"
Her behavior surprised me so much that I never even had a chance to stop her next action. She fought me off, hitting me with her fists. I would have been in serious trouble if she had been using her fighting skills. But as empty of my Gabrielle as this woman was, so too were her fighting abilities suspiciously absent.
"Gabrielle, stop!"
I yelled. She fought me off, well enough to squirm away. She took off running down the middle of the muddy road. As I said, her action so surprised me that it took nearly a few heartbeats before I even knew she was truly running away from me. Getting my head back into its reality of what was happening, I sped off after her. It only took a few moments for me to catch up to her, but God, how my heart was breaking. I never thought that Gabrielle would break like this, not after all she'd been through in her life. I grabbed her and spun her around to look into her eyes. I pinned her arms to her sides and held her tight.
"Gabrielle, it's me, Xena. Please, love, talk to me."
That's all it took to bring her back to me.
"Xena?"
She looked around as if she had no idea how she'd gotten in the middle of the countryside in the black of night. "Yes, love, it's me." I loosened my precious hold and instead wrapped my arms around her stunned and freezing body. She sobbed against me, and the sound was enough to tear my heart into two.
"Gabrielle, little one, what on earth were you doing? Where are you trying to go?"
"Home,"
she said between her sobs.
"I want to go home."
I was confused. Where does she mean? Has she been trying to get back to Amphipolis, or home to our castle by the sea?
"I don't understand. Corinth, is that where you mean?"
She pulled away and looked at me. Now it was she who appeared confused. She slipped to the ground and fell to her knees in the mud, her sobs growing in intensity.
"I don't even have one, do?"
she cried.
"I won't go home, and I don't even have one!"
Her answer shocked me, but then again, it shouldn't have. This is what her flight had been about. I was correct when I assumed that she wasn't running away, but to something. She wanted to go home. What child hadn't felt that at some time in their adult life? Gabrielle had found out earlier in the day that everything she had been previously associated with home had now been denied her. The dream that most probably carried her through difficult times in her young life had been shattered. The dream of returning home had turned into a nightmare. I could do no more than kiss her forehead, wet with rain. That's when I felt how warm she was in contrast to the freezing cold. She shivered uncontrollably, and it was then that I saw she had passed out. I lifted her limp form and motioned Effany to bring the horses closer.
"What in Artemis's name is going on with her?" she asked.
"She's ill. Come on, Eff. We have to get her back to camp. She's burning up with fever."
"Son of a Buckeye!"
she muttered as she helped me to an Oriole with Gabrielle in my arms.
"Doesn't anything in life ever go easy for you two?"
"Not lately," I responded. Chapter 23. The Expense of Spirit in a Waste of Shame. Gabrielle's eyes fluttered open, and I reached down to kiss her forehead. My lips brushed against dry, overheated skin. She was even warmer than before, and I suppose the worry showed in my eyes. But I believed her too feverish to notice my expression.
In fact,
her own visage told me that she wasn't completely aware of everything around her. To my heart's delight, she recognized me and offered an extremely weak smile.
"Are we on a boat?"
Gabrielle asked. I couldn't hold back a small chuckle. "No, little one. We're in the wagon. We're on our way home." Gabrielle winced slightly, and I cursed at my thoughtlessness. I hadn't realized my exact words until after I had already uttered them. She didn't say anything further, and I wondered if the word home had simply evoked a memory of the previous evening that she couldn't fully remember in her present condition. I simply decided to continue. "We left as soon as the sun rose, love. We should be home this evening."
"So soon?"
she rasped. "We left the majority of the foot soldiers behind so we could move faster."
"Am I that sick?"
She spoke so coherently that I forgot she was only mentally half there. Her eyes told the real story, as she appeared to struggle to stay alert. "Not at all, love. You have a fever, but I bet it's gone by the time we get back to the inn." I didn't lie exactly, but in truth, I was more worried about her illness than I let on. Gabrielle rarely felt poorly, unlike me who tended to wake each day with some sort of pain caused by the way I abused my body for so many seasons. "If not, some of Cyrene's soup will fix you right up. Here, drink some of this."
"Oh, that's terrible,"
she said after taking a minimal swallow. "I know, but if I told you that ahead of time, you wouldn't have taken it. Sorry, but it's good for you. It'll help keep that fever under control. Here, take a drink of water. It'll wash away the bitter taste." She shook her head after one small swallow.
"It hurts too much to swallow."
"You really need to keep drinking as much water as you can, love."
"Try later,"
she said as she settled back against the pillows once more. I thought she was ready to fall asleep again until I could feel the weight of her gaze watching my every move. I replaced the water flask on the peg it hung upon and turned to look at her.
"I'm so sorry, Xena."
"Whatever for?"
"I didn't mean to cause so much trouble last night. I just meant to... I'm not sure what. But it was almost like I didn't have any control. I didn't really know what I was doing. I just let my emotions take over and lead me."
"I know that, my love, and you owe me no apologies. We can talk more about everything that's happened, but right now, I only want you to concentrate on one thing."
"Getting better?"
"Who says you're not an oracle?" I winked at her as my jest called her to smile again. Gabrielle was asleep before Amy left the wagon. We stopped for a few moments to rest and water the horses. I took the opportunity to stretch my legs, even though part of me was loath to leave Gabrielle alone. Effany, who had hovered as close to the wagon as possible since Gabrielle returned to camp, gave me an idea. "Do you mind sending someone to sit with Gabrielle, preferably someone she knows?"
"I'd be happy to,"
Micah answered from behind me. I turned to glare at her.
"I don't want you anywhere near her."
"Micah, you're supposed to be on point," Effany said. "Get back up there."
"Yes, Commander."
The young woman looked as though her world had ended, but I was still too angry to care. I knew that Gabrielle would chastise me for such behavior, but it was something that I seemed unable to control, especially not without Gabrielle at my side. Obviously, this whole homecoming had worn on my nerves as well. "She and Shanta get on well. Why don't you take some time to get some rest yourself, though?" Effany wavered to a nearby Amazon after a short exchange, the women ran off, apparently to find Shanta. "Mostly because, as tired as I am, I know there'll be no way I'd sleep at this point. Not until we get home where the healers are close by."
"I'd guess I'd do the same," Effany answered, patting my shoulder. "How is she?"
I think her fever's getting worse. The medicine I made up isn't strong enough to fight something serious, but I don't have the herbs to make anything better. Shanta, one of the Amazons I recognized because of the time she spent at Gabrielle's personal Amazon guard, ran up and saluted both of us. Effie explained, and Shanta seemed happy to sit with Gabrielle. See if you could get some water down if she wakes, I said before Shanta climbed into the wagon. We set off once more, but I rode Tenorio a small ways behind the wagon. Effie was good for company for me. Being a warrior herself, she knew enough not to prattle on, but rode in silence beside me, acting rather unlike myself. I began our conversation first. I thought it was quite odd that I should want to talk about what happened in the last 2 days. I never wanted to discuss such things, especially if they had anything to do with feelings or emotions. Gods, what Gabrielle had done to me. I remember thinking that it was rather wonderful, actually. Hades couple of days, eh? I asked.
That it is. You know, I've been thinking. After all Gabrielle has been through, mentally and now physically, maybe your little surprise package would be a welcome surprise for her.
My silence hadn't been meant to confuse Effany, but I didn't know how to explain what I was feeling.
Did I say something wrong, Xena?
She actually looked concerned, perhaps worried as she said wrong things somehow. No, my friend, not at all. I don't know what to do about that now.
What to do? I'm not sure I understand.
I'm not sure Gabrielle can take many more of my surprises, I answered. What if it turns out like this did? What a fucking disaster.
You're not seriously thinking about not telling her about the girl, are you?
Effany, Gabrielle's been hurt in a way that I don't think she'll ever. Look, I pray to Athena she'll get over it, but I know she'll never forget it. How can I set her up like that again? Effany's manner was one of the thoughtful silence. She offered no excuses or false hopes, which I appreciated.
It's true. Her homecoming wasn't what she wanted it to be, and I'm with you. I hope it doesn't affect her in an adverse way. Not permanently, anyway. Gabrielle's a different woman to gauge. You know better than I do, but I honestly think she's about the last person in the world who would ever give up on anything, no matter how difficult. The woman I see as Gabrielle would, given the choice between living a dull but easy life and living a painful, even difficult life that's full of love and meaning. Well, I think she'd choose the latter.
You have completely lost me, woman. What in the Hades is all that supposed to mean?
Sorry, she chuckled. I was sort of thinking out loud. I was thinking about that unique woman Gabrielle is. I guess, no matter what she's been through, she always manages to see the positive side of a situation.
Meaning?
Meaning that as much as you love her, Xena, you can't ask her to be less than she is. Whether the child is hers or not is irrelevant, don't you think? You love her too much to refuse her anything, and she's the sort of woman that wouldn't hold it against you if it turned out badly. You two really are the perfect match when you think about it.
Very funny, I answered, pulling back on Tenorio's reins. Our animals came to a stop, and I waved over a soldier to take my mount. Guess I have some rather heavy thinking to do.
You'll do the right thing.
I have to thank you for this little talk, Effany, I said as I dismounted. I started out a little confused. Now, thanks to you, I'm completely confused.
Anything I can do to help, just call on me, Conqueror.
She winked and spurred her horse away. Someday, Amazon. Someday. I muttered under my breath. To be continued.
Well, that concludes chapters 22 and 23 of the Conqueror series, Time's Fell Hand, by the late L.J. Moss. Hope everybody's enjoyed the show. As usual, if anybody has a song or a movie or a book review or a video review, or if they have any late news regarding the Xenaverse, or any announcements that they'd like to make, send me an email at xena.uber@gmail.com. So until the next episode, everyone, take care, enjoy life and love. Bye-bye.